You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
If one is disabled, one should concentrate on the things one can do, and not regret the things one can't do. In fact, my disability has been a help in a way. It has freed me and given me more time to think and do research, in which being disabled is no handicap. It's all in the mind, 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 the mind.
We live in a society where we are so constantly bombarded with media that we become easily influenced by it. So much so that it is hard not to emulate what we see. In 1985, Lim Price and Jocelyn Sampson from CITR radio station 101.9 explored media's portrayal of minorities, specifically women. Today, we are so lucky to live in a time when the changes that needed to be made were seen as impossible are now a must. Media has changed so much within the last 10 years that it's only fair to say that the representation in media should also change with it. I'm Estefania Solis, and along with Dan McCorick, we will take you on an insightful journey to explore how radio producers are working with underrepresented people, specifically accessibility and disability groups, how they have been influenced in their lives from the media that they've consumed to the media that they produce today. We go back to 1985 when Jocelyn Sampson and Lim Price take a look at television as a model to reality.
By the time the average young person graduates from high school, he or she will have spent more time in front of the television set than in the classroom. In addition to television, there are the radios, magazines, and newspapers. The impact of the media as a socializing force cannot be ignored. Although studies have often been contradictory, the overall findings of research in the area show that there is a definite correlation between the information in the media and the attitude that those who are exposed to this information then hold.
Endless papers have been written about how consumers of media are affected.
In addition to offering an alternative to conventional television and media, another solution is to show people, youths in particular, how they are being manipulated and to teach them how to become media literate. Lucy Alderton.
Even if you didn't watch television, you would see billboards, print media, you are bombarded by images. So I don't think that we have yet learned, or most people have not yet learned, really discriminating tools, really strong analysis of what messages and how the messages are being put across to them. But I think we all have a sense that something's not right when it's not right. And we may not be able to describe what it is, but we know it makes us upset, or we know that seeing a certain image has an effect on us. So that's what we need to explore and understand.
But what about the people creating the media we consume? When you get to make the decision of what your media creations portray and what issues they tackle, does it change your relationship with media itself? We decided to listen to what DP, Molly, and Katie, three radio producers actively working in the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9, had to say about their experiences of media and how it has influenced them today. Through the course of their stories, we will learn about what projects they've started since working within CITR 101.9, and also what they're bringing to it in order to change how society looks at disability. Three women, two radio shows, one goal. These are their stories.
Well, my name is DP Lale. I am a community member at CITR and have been for 3.5 years, working on my fourth in coming May. I mostly work with CITR News 101, writing and producing stories that I thought were interesting and appealing to me, and hoping that the listeners also saw it the same way as I did. I wrote stories on accessibility, disability, as well as animal rights. But yeah, that's who I am. And outside of that, I am born and raised in Richmond, BC. That's who I am.
So my name is Molly McAllister, and I'm a fifth-year student at UBC with a major in geography and environment and sustainability. And starting in September, I've been working at CITR as the Accessibility Collective Coordinator and have been producing our show, All Access Pass, with our team of volunteers.
And my name is Katie Tissington-Turner. I'm also a fifth-year student. I've known Molly since first year. I joined the collective as a practicum student in January. I'm studying psychology and gender, race, sexuality, and social justice, and I'm here for the latter in a practicum capacity.
DP Leal is a charismatic radio producer at CITR 101.9, who was born and raised with a rare disability called metatropic dwarfism. She invites us to listen to her personal journey with media and how it has affected her until now.
As far as TV shows go, well, I think any child who starts watching television, Sesame Street would be the first show or something in that field. So that was my first TV experience, watching Sesame Street. Yeah, and then just daily watching and getting the experience from that. They never really covered a lot of shows that explain that there's actually a person with a disability, which is too bad because it is common nowadays, and I'm sure it was common back then. But learning the whole disability, accessibility aspect, I kind of had to learn that on my own and with the family and then the doctors and stuff to get some services in place. But television really didn't give me anything until after I got a little bit older.
Now that we can see how complex disabilities can be portrayed in the media, we must include how differently they are seen in the social justice spectrum. Katie, who is a gender, race, sexuality, and social justice, or JRSJ Minor for short, at the University of British Columbia, gives us more insight on this based on her studies and what contributions CITR 101.9 is doing to help.
I think specifically with social justice, it's something that I've discussed in my practicum course a little bit and why I find this an interesting involvement to be a part of. And somebody from my class actually just said it today that will be joining the collective later on, that the area of physical and cognitive abilities or disabilities is almost viewed as completely separate from other social justice things. Racial ethnicity and gender, sexuality, sexual orientation, all of those different things. It's almost viewed as separate from all of those, especially with visibly different abilities. But we said that there are intersecting parts of who a person is that still impacts people that have these different abilities, and they're not separate or immune to those. They're affected, and having a different ability, be it cognitive or physical, is another dimension of that. So I'm trying to connect those things and integrate them because it's just another aspect of who we are as humans and in the social justice world.
The issues that Katie discusses are important everywhere, especially in formal learning environments. 20 years ago, UBC, or University of British Columbia, created a department called Access and Diversity. To this day, they are facing the main challenge of funding, which affects areas like staffing and outreach. This makes it difficult to provide full services for those in need on campus. Janet Meek, the head of Access and Diversity, tells us more about this topic.
I'm the Director of Access and Diversity, and I work with the Student and Development Services Management Team. We do that work through policy review, through the development of leadership programs that focus on social justice, capacity building with students. So our focus right now is really on active bystander and active witnessing kinds of programs, so students understand hate, discrimination, and stereotyping, and they're able to speak out against those kinds of things.
If you were to take, very interesting thing, if you were to take television as a model of reality, which I used to do in my 100 classes, and you compare the demographics, for instance, of television, the stereotypes of television, with reality, it's so distorted, it is really shocking. Even in something so simple as the murder rate in television, you know, is 1,000 times the murder rate in real life, that there's almost nobody who's old in this world. There's almost nobody who's young. There are very few ethnic groups. And the problems between people are things that are solved in a second, well, at least in half an hour. So the relationship of television to reality is absolutely bizarre. And yet, those people who were socialized into watching a lot of television end up thinking that the real world is like the television model.
How many mainstream disabled characters can you name? DP grew up without a TV, radio, or movie role model. Something that may not seem like a big issue to most of us, but created a world of difference to her. DP explains further what effect it had on her.
Well, a lot of my favorites were back then shows like Friends, which is common, and so many other TV shows. So I had to kind of picture myself as, okay, I have a wheelchair, but they're not explaining that way. So I had to think of it as a typical person dealing with these characters. And so I had to think it that way and then to deal with my own problems my way. So it was a little challenging. I think physical-wise, it's different for me, but mentally and everyday life, emotionally, what happens to these characters that are portrayed in the TV.
The messages and stereotypes that the media presents often have little to do with reality. The materialistic, sexist, violent images add up to a misrepresentation of life as it is outside the media.
Well, in real life, as I like to call it, in reality, you have parents who may not be successful career-wise, but still working at a job and doing as best as they can, right, to support their child needs. Whereas on television, you see these parents that are highly educated, really successful job, and they live in this really gorgeous house, or their child's bedroom is really pretty looking. So for me, it was growing up and embrace what it was. And it will come and go, but it's not going to be exactly like what television is. And that's fine.
Yeah.
When you see televisions, they face different problems than what you deal with in reality. And if you look at the television shows, their problems are solved in like minutes. In reality, it can be from days to months to whatever, right? So that part I knew right away. You know, television is just fantasy. There's no reality, really. I mean, yeah, you encounter some problems here or there. There is some hidden message there, but it ultimately, you, how you deal with it. I never really looked at media from my own perspective until when I got much older. And that is only because of the news stories when you hear someone with a disability go through a problem for transportation or something, you know, accessibility-wise. But as far as TV shows go, I've always separated myself unless it's a problem that I think might be relevant to me.
When you grow up without being able to identify with the media that you are exposed to, how do you make sense of yourself? DP felt so estranged from all forms of media that she distanced herself from it for most of her formative years. This is evidence of the disparity that media can create, which CITR 101.9 and other progressive media outlets are trying to eliminate. Then we have Molly. Molly is a coordinator for CITR's All Access Pass, a radio show that talks about accessibility issues. Although she's not personally suffering from a disability, she seems to have also found herself working in media that focuses on many of the same issues that DP talks about. She, too, sees the issues of representation and the effect that it can have on people of all spectrums.
I've witnessed in tuning into radio or seeing things on TV, and especially nowadays as well on the internet, that people with disabilities aren't represented as prominently as media as they are a part of a demographic in society. And so I think it's been really important for us to be able to make that change with our radio show, and also just be cognizant of the fact that people of disabilities aren't given, I think, the same fair opportunities to be involved in radio and media.
Honestly, if I saw a person with a disability in a TV character, I probably could see myself in that situation, but there's no reality to touch on people with disabilities, which is kind of sad if you look at it, because especially nowadays, you see people with different sorts of disabilities, whether that's physical or mental. It would be nice to see something in that line so that people are more educated, and it would be interesting.
Back in 1985, the idea of being exposed to television and radio was of such great concern that the actual representation of people in television and radio was the last thing on their minds.
Young people are especially susceptible to media influences because of their lack of discerning capabilities. Studies have shown that young people are unable to differentiate between television programs and commercials. Obviously, children gain this ability with maturity, but do all media messages become as clear to people with age? Media messages are agonized over so as to penetrate us. Are we always able to see past them? For the first time, we are witnessing the coming of age of a generation raised on television and are seeing the effects of the medium on these young people.
I think in terms, too, of being influenced in my younger years by media, especially television, I think because we don't see very many people with disabilities on TV and in movies growing up, you don't necessarily have a very adequate understanding of disabilities and what different disabilities look like, mm-hmm. or maybe even how to talk about disability topics. And so as you go through your youth and your teenage years, it might be an uncomfortable conversation. It might mean that you have uncomfortable feelings in certain situations because you just don't have that awareness. And I think if we saw people of all abilities represented on TV and in movies, it would be less of a quote-unquote like special thing, and it would just be the norm.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm used to interacting with people of all abilities, and I'm maybe more aware of people with all different abilities, but it's not this kind of taboo thing, and it's just normal. It doesn't deserve extra recognition. It doesn't have to be a special topic.
Lucy Alderton.
It's also this generation that has grown up on television. This generation is seeing it from day one. And so unless we require and demand that television and radio reflect a more realistic view, we are already teaching 2- and 3- and 4-year-olds about what their options are for the future.
Katie of All Access Pass explores this topic further from the academic point of view. She also explains how CITR is diverse and offers UBC students and the community members insight into accessibility issues within the radio station.
In a slightly broader stroke, I think since I was younger and where I am now, being at the end of my kind of undergraduate academic experience, I have become a lot more critical of everything that I see, especially being in the Gender, Race, Sexuality, and Social Justice Institute as my minor. It's an especially critical kind of academic arena to be in, and I can recognize more easily who is being represented. Like what Molly was saying now, I can see that CITR is a really special space because of their mandate to ensure that if somebody wants their voice to be heard, or they have a thought, or they're even just wanting to experiment with media in some capacity, that they want them to. They make the space, they make it accessible. If you don't have a lot of money, they have the equipment that you can experiment with. If you haven't found it physically accessible to use this kind of technology or to receive the training, then they're going to try to make that as accessible as they can for you.
In short, the money they spend makes youths an important target group for many industries. In the course of targeting youths, these industries frequently offer unrealistic, fantastic portrayals of life.
Will youths be disillusioned and bitter when the unrealistic lifestyles do not become their own? Patricia Groves.
I think that there is a very real place in life for fantasy and illusion. As long as that fantasy and illusion enables you to develop a drive and an inspiration.
I think, like I said, media can be a good thing, but it could be a bad thing too. It depends how you look at it. But it shouldn't control your whole life.
With time, DP's relationship with media began to change. This change came around a pivotal moment after her high school graduation. While she once separated herself from media, the very entity that made her feel so isolated, she began to feel a pull towards discovering what would eventually empower her.
When I got out of the high school, like anybody else, I didn't know what to do. I had no plan. I mean, I had planned, wanted to be a counselor, but a typical person, I had to figure out what school I wanted to go to. How's that going to work for me? Because I need support to help me with note-taking and to do writing for homework assignments. So I had no idea what was out there. Because remember, I was in high school. So I didn't really get the exposure like anybody else. It was high school to home, home to high school. And so it was like this whole new world that I have yet to explore to figure out what's out there. And school, I did go to college for 4 years. Later through the years, I took sociology, which there was a section in there where we talked about media. And I just remember being so fascinated with it that I'm like, I definitely see myself in the media or doing something in the media. So that's how the whole broadcasting thing came about.
DP evidently went through many of the issues that we may be familiar with from our own post-high school era. Nevertheless, her interest in radio had been piqued. She wasn't going to give up now. Having access to higher education put DP on her way to broadcasting and producing media. Whereas before she had felt estranged and disconnected, now she was ready to take on this next phase of her life. We'll come back to DP for a second. But first, let us introduce you again to Janet Meek, the director of UBC's Access and Diversity, who will explain the progress it has made from its beginning to where it currently lies today.
The disability side, the side that supports students, faculty, and staff with disabilities, was established in 1991-92, and I joined the university in 1993. And then there was also the Women's Students Office, which had a much longer history with the university. In 2003, the vice president at the time combined those two units mm-hmm. into one and then expanded the responsibilities to include race and ethnicity, sexual orientation and gender identity, and all of the intersections.
Access and Diversity is still a fairly new department with a long way to go, but they are on the right path in representing people with accessibility issues. In the past years, they have provided note takers and exam accommodations for people with physical, mental, and other learning disabilities. They have taken it a step further in making UBC a fair learning environment. Now, back to DP. How is she going to become involved in media?
I did a demo for the CKWF, and with that experience, I thought, this is really cool. So that's when the whole radio broadcasting stuff came about. So now I knew what I wanted to do. Just how to navigate the whole future goal of mine was another challenge. So what school did I want it to go? And what was that going to look like? And BCIT was my one option. And there was another school, but I just couldn't get a one-to-one support to do the note-taking and some help writing for homework assignments. And so that, to me, stopped my plans right there for a bit. And then one, trying to remember that actually I have a goal. I need to keep working at it. Maybe there is another way. And so the searching came for maybe doing a volunteer at some radio station. That's CITR was one of the places for me to check out. And here I am.
Molly and Katie's own journeys into radio differed greatly. We see how the availability of resources made all the difference in their pursuit of a voice in radio production.
I've known about CITR since I came to UBC, especially when the station was in the old sub. We would see posters around, but I didn't ever get involved in my first years at UBC. I didn't really tune in either, so I knew it was this thing. I knew we had this really cool radio station, but nothing further than that. And then this past year, coming into my last year at UBC, I was looking for jobs that I could have, part-time jobs as a student, and I saw the posting for the Accessibility Collective Coordinator, and I thought I'd give it a shot and send in an application, and here we are now.
My story sounds pretty similar to Molly's in terms of understanding that we had a radio station, seeing some funky posters around campus. I emailed them, I think, in my third year and said, hey, could I come get a tour, see if I could get involved? And then I never followed up on it. Somebody that lived on our floor in first year actually started her own show in second or third year, so I knew it was a thing, but I became a little more invested by virtue of Molly being invested in it this year.
DP eventually found herself also gravitating towards CITR.
I got involved by, well, searching, looking for a place to volunteer, specifically on radio broadcasting. And I did Google search, or at least my support worker helped me do a Google search online. And it was this and another place. And I chose to try this CATR first, just to get a tour and see what it was all about. And it was just a great impression I had. And I just got involved right there and then. I spoke to a volunteer manager right there and then what my interest was. Like, I just wanted to get into radio. I didn't quite know what exactly I wanted to do, like news or sports or weather or whatever, but just that I wanted to get into radio. And then after, I got into news just as a reporter, picking topics that were interesting to me, but also something that the listeners might want to get a different feel from their everyday news lives.
We then asked the radio co-producers what inspired them to get involved with CITR.
I think for me, it wasn't so much my studies and my major at UBC that made me interested in this initiative, but more so the work experience that I have had over the past 4 years outside of university. So for the past 3 years, I've worked for the organization Easter Seals BC, and I've worked specifically at their camp on Lake Shaunigan, so Easter Seals Camp Shaunigan, and that is a camp for kids and young adults with a big array of different disabilities, and I get to spend the whole summer there and work with an amazing team of staff and an amazing group of campers. And so I've had exposure to the community of people with disabilities through that job. I've also been a volunteer in Vancouver with a soccer league that supports children of all abilities. And so I'm interested in those topics, especially in social justice for people with different disabilities. And I just thought it would be a good fit when I saw this job posting.
There is a shift happening to bring diversity for people with disabilities to the radio station CITR 101.9.
I started off with CITR News 101. Basically, I told them what I wanted to do because I had no radio experience. I needed to, like, treat this as if I'm in school. So the volunteer manager that was here gave me a tour, and she got to know me a little bit, asked me questions, and then right away, she paired me up with what then news director. She basically was my mentor, like the teacher, guided me all the ins and outs of how news world works. And yeah, I went from there to now, which I get it now. There's still a lot of learning to do.
Katie started off as a huge moral supporter of me in first semester as I was going through the process of learning the ropes of radio and being mildly stressed out in terms of achieving some big goals. And I was very lucky to have her come and get on board directly as of January.
Kind of a new way to be involved in communications, which is something that I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that we're both here in the studio now.
Yeah, it's been an amazing new experience for both of us, I think.
Through the course of their stories, we learned about what projects they've started since working within the media. Also, what they are bringing to it in order to change how society looks at disability.
I was still trying to understand how this whole media stuff works when I started with CITR. And now that I know how to work it, kind of, I have used it to my advantage in a way to address issues like disability and accessibility. And yeah, so I did some stories on a couple of years ago. I did the accessibility documentary, my first radio documentary, and that's when the UBC old student union building was gonna be replaced. And I was fortunate enough to get one of the architects to do an interview with for the documentary, and was able to put a little bit of my input as far as accessibility was concerned.
I haven't been on the collective for as long. I have experience doing communications in some other capacities, writing for an online magazine at UBC. I do a lot of photography. I have a blog, but I think attaching some of my opinions and thoughts, my actual voice, and having that broadcasted and knowing that we don't know how many people are listening or listen after it's become a podcast once the live show is done. But I think that has been an interesting experience, expressing some of my thoughts and vocal some of the things that I've learned and having people hear it that way rather than me writing an opinion piece or expressing on my blog that I feel this way about it or sharing something on social media that is written in somebody else's voice. So I think that experience in the 2 months that I've been with the collective has been really interesting and challenging for me, but something that I've really welcomed.
I think it's also been really neat to be able to step back from focusing on our own voices on the radio and seeing it as our mandate as a collective to amplify the voices of a demographic that's traditionally underrepresented in radio and media. So we use our radio show to facilitate bringing new voices into the conversation. So it's much less about our voices and it's about what the platform and the safe space that we're able to create in order for other people to come get involved in radio and media.
DP's experience with disability has led to some discomfort in public spaces and cameras. For her, the radio waves became a liberation into a judgment-free platform, where she has been able to transform herself into an example of what CITR 101.9 and other progressive media platforms are trying to do in bringing equal representation for people of all abilities.
I like to be behind the scenes. I don't like to be on camera because I've already kind of get that just being around people at the malls or public appearances, going to concerts or things like that, where people constantly just stare at you or just look at you. And I thought by doing radio, nobody can actually see you. And you're more comfortable when people are not staring at you when you're speaking. It's just you and the mic or the switchboards or one or two people that you're doing an interview with. So it's more my comfortability because of my disability.
Lucy Alderton believes that it is up to the public to demand changes.
It is something that has been acknowledged in broadcasting and advertising within the industry for some time, but making the big jump between acknowledgement by the umbrella group and acknowledgement by the individual broadcasters and DJs and people producing the programs is another matter. And so we have to really think, what do we want as a public? Do we want this to continue? Are we going to stand up and demand differences? Are we going to demand a more equitable portrayal of our lives?
UBC has been trying to take an active role by bringing forward this awareness. There's a long way to go before we have a completely accessible campus, but access and diversity have begun to make a start and provide the support needed.
The work we do one-on-one with students is primarily around support for students with disabilities. So in that circumstance, our responsibility is to ensure that the university meets both its moral and its legal obligations to provide every opportunity for students with disabilities to participate in everything the university has to offer. So that would look like, for example, for a deaf student, interpreting or captioning, note-taking in the classroom. It means that we work with campus and community planning very closely around issues of the built environment and how it's designed, work with instructors on universal instructional design, although that's something we're just starting to do. And then we also do things like we provide note takers, we have a tutoring program for students with disabilities, we produce alternate format materials, so braille, e-text, large print, audio. For the disability services, primarily we work with students. So any student who has a documented disability would be eligible for our service. We leave the agency with students, so it's their choice as to whether or not they come to seek service.
These women today have paved the way in how to raise equality and compassion for all human beings. DP in particular has gone on to make an incredible difference in her Richmond community, as well as the greater BC area. Working with CITR radio station has led her to collaborate with the Rick Hansen Foundation, a Canadian institution that focuses on raising awareness and creates opportunities for people with disabilities.
I did a documentary for CITR called Accessibility, and due to that documentary, a local newspaper reporter wanted to do a story on it, on my documentary, and what it was about, accessibility around Lower Mainland, and some issues that we really haven't encountered, and it needs to be addressed. And so the local newspaper in Richmond did a story, and then CBC picked it up. Then when CBC did a report, Rick Hansen Foundation actually called the station manager, and then station manager called me, and then so all that came about. They wanted to do a feature on accessibility, so they asked if they can do a video of me on accessibility, but it's a more on the line of an inspiring video instead of the terminology of accessibility. And so I thought, you know, this is great. I mean, something I can share around the world. And yeah, it was an amazing experience. And it's just, again, a different line of media, just connecting, networking, and getting the message out there that there's diversity in media now. I was nervous, but of course it was a pre-recorded, so I was okay in that sense. But as a camera person, like, I obviously haven't really worked on that stuff, but it's a different feel because people are going to watch you. Whereas on the radio, people don't watch you. So it was a good experience for me in the sense that I'm a person with a disability, and it's a rare disability, but we need to have more voices out there so young people feel the same way, the comfort of their disability.
However, the reality is they are still facing challenges in this generation that keeps them apart from being seen as equal human beings and allowing them to express themselves. DP goes on to explain this further.
One of the challenges for me was how to get to place, because I can't take a bus, and taxis are insanely expensive, even buses, and I don't work, so that doesn't really help me. Where's the money going to come for traveling? So that was one question. And then, yeah, where am I going to get the support, you know, for one-to-one? So those were the two main challenging for me. But thankfully, I do have a vehicle now that I can get to my place in Richmond to here at CITR at UBC. So that's one challenge fixed. And the other challenge, I do have support, but it wasn't easy because you have to deal with government and funding. And there's a lot of people out there that need support. So money is a big, big issue. And I was fortunate that I was able to get some help.
DP is not the only one to struggle with mobility in and out of campus. Janet Meek tells us more about the progress UBC is doing to ensure that those who are physically impaired can get around and make the most of their time at the University of British Columbia.
UBC is one of the largest physical campuses in North America, and we have this ambition right now to be a pedestrian campus, which means that if you're not able to walk long distances, it's a real challenge to get often from one class to another. And I would say, in terms of the environment, that's one of our biggest barriers. Campus planning has been working over the last, I think it's 4 years, on what they're calling the public realm. So that's all of the outdoor spaces, and they have funding to improve those spaces, and a part of what they're doing while they just make them nicer is addressing issues of universal design. Given the fact that UBC is not yet universally accessible, we need to understand what the sort of the functional impacts of a medical condition or disability are so that we can figure out where the barriers are going to be and put some accommodations in place. And so we ask for that kind of detail, including things like whether medications would have an impact, what the prognosis might be, when, if it's a condition that kind of ebbs and flows, when it's most likely to be triggered. And then we use that information to determine what kinds of accommodations we would recommend to the faculties.
Molly has also seen the hurdles DP mentions. She shares her views on working with children with disabilities.
I think I've been able to bring a lot of what I've learned and done with Easter Seals to the radio station in terms of already having experience working with people of all abilities has given me a big comfort level in that sense. So I came into this job, I think, just with an ethic of kindness and compassion towards people of all abilities, but then also just realizing that everybody wants to be treated like everybody else. There doesn't have to be this social hierarchy or this kind of awkwardness around working with someone with a disability.
disability who you're maybe, and you're maybe not familiar with that disability, there doesn't have to be this awkwardness. So I was able to jump past, I think, the stage of awkwardness. And then I've also seen the contrast from working at camp, which is a really inclusive, fun, caring space where everybody is celebrated for who they are and we encourage everyone to accomplish any of their goals. I've seen the contrast between that and then the quote-unquote regular world where a lot of our campers face massive accessibility barriers, and those could be social or physical or cultural barriers, so they don't always have those experiences that they're able to have at camp in the real world. And so I think it's something that I'm passionate about, and I could almost even use the word angry, that social equity is not present in the world that we live in like general communities and society. And so I thought it would be amazing to be able to bring the voice of that issue onto the radio waves, which is such a public domain, and kind of just stand up and speak to an issue that I really care about.
DP adds on how difficult it is to change city bylaws to benefit people with accessibility issues. When the obstacles are legal, it becomes a whole new ordeal.
There's a lot of hurdles. If you want to get some changes, there's some bylaws for building codes, which is difficult to change, which is a shame, because what if it's a safety concern? Then what? Do you wait for someone that's injured and then does a lawsuit against you? Mm-hmm. Like, it makes no sense to me. But I understand that because it's a big change, they have to go through all these mandates.
DP's involvement with the Rick Hansen Foundation, along with CITR, also opened up new doors for her. She went on to interview the architects of UBC's new student union building, The Nest, who addressed accessibility concerns for the building on campus. By creating an environment where people of all capabilities can come together to collaborate, we are creating equal opportunities for them to work in places like CITR 101.9. Derek Moore, UBC's ex-vice president of the Student Society, and Michael Kingsmill expand on the building plans.
Accessibility is a really big thing for the AMS. So our building will be fully accessible. The goal going into the project with all the different spaces was to have all the different spaces be 100% accessible. There will be wide aisles, like wide major arteries throughout the building. I can't speak really well towards all the spaces, and we're still waiting on the final kind of furniture layouts as well. So those will go into these plans. Uh-huh. But from what I've seen here, yes, like it's all very accessible. I even know one of the considerations down in the Pit Pub was we're going to have a stage in there, and one of the original design had a corridor running through the back of the pit, and that corridor allowed kegs to be distributed to the two bars on each side of the stage, okay, as well as access for anyone, including people in wheelchairs, up onto the stage. As design went on, that corridor was removed in order to get the extra space,
right?
But what's being added is we're adding a lift for people in wheelchairs to get up onto the stage. Like, that was discussed and really reinforced in USEP committee and in exec.
The importance of designing elevators was also discussed.
So we have all elevators are accessible to all people, and we also have all the bathrooms, of course. We don't feature just one fixture in the bathroom. There's more than just the minimum. We also have introduced accessibility for the hearing impaired, something that we don't have a very good coverage in the current building. We'll also be having, for the visually impaired, better signage, braille on all the door plaques and things like that, so that people can have equal opportunity there. So lots of little things, and even some bigger initiatives to acknowledge that this building is for everyone.
DP also talks about what actions the radio station CITR is taking to bring awareness like this to the public.
But it's great that CITR or any other news outlets are out there to report on these things, so it's quicker that, hey, we need changes. Let's get on it instead of waiting for years and years down the road. There's actually a lot more programs person with a disability actually produces. I know CITR has a weekly show every Thursdays now where they discuss accessibility, disability, and stuff, and that's great. And there's another co-op radio that also do a show Thursday mornings, and they talk about disability and accessibility as well as many other topics related to disability. And I think it's great that it's opened up a diversity into radio that was kind of lacking way back then. That's just my opinion, because I really haven't heard a lot out there as I do now, because I'm part of a radio community. Then there was a CITR Access Day featuring content on accessibility, disability, equity, social accessibility, adaptive programming, and a lot of other stuff, but disability related. And I did a segment on having the ambassadors from Rick Hansen Foundation come in and tell the viewers of what the foundation is all about, what they do as far as like charity and overcoming barriers for people who have fears. And these that ambassadors actually have some sort of disability, chatting about what the foundation does and how they got involved and things like that. So in a favor of me helping them, they helped us.
Going from consumer to producer is no small feat. These three women have experienced a big shift. And while obstacles will continue to come up, great memories come with them. It also goes to show how progressive organizations such as CITR can help in the change that needs to be made in media. Molly, DP, and Katie leave us with what they hope to pass on to the people tuning in to radio shows like All Access Pass.
I think it's been really neat to be able to interview a lot of different students and professionals. I've been able to learn about a lot of student initiatives on campus that I didn't know about before, especially in the domain of mental health. I think I wasn't as familiar with topics of mental health before I entered this job in radio, so that's been really interesting to explore initiatives on campus, different clubs, different events, and being a part of the conversation about destigmatizing mental health and mental illness. I've also had some really great experiences with interviewing professionals. In particular, I was able to interview the director for the Center for Interactive Research and Collaboration in Autism from UBC, so that was a really neat experience that stands out to me. And I think just getting to know all of our volunteers at the station and those who have come to get involved in the collective has been a really cool experience as well.
The two ladies that I interviewed, they actually had a spinal cord injury, and I thought, you know, I've always lived with a disability and they didn't. So it was nice to hear the other perspective of how they went and got into it. And it's an eye-opener for me that we all have emotions. We all have anger. It's the way how you deal with it, and maybe be thankful that, hey, yes, you have a disability, but look at the good side. Positive sides. And that's what those two ladies taught me. It really doesn't stop them from living their dreams. One of them is a UBC student and going to get her law degree, and the other one is a rugby player, like an athlete. So she's in the championships right now, and she's doing all the stuff that she thought she lost, but she didn't.
I think because we talk about issues that I care so much about, so it's actually made me very nervous at first, and then I'm not very good with emotions. It's made me really motivated to be really comprehensive in what we do as a collective and what we put on our show. And I hope that listeners can learn more about these topics, but I hope the biggest thing that they learn is that, you know, we should just treat everybody with the same level of care and compassion. And it's so hard because I think I can articulate it so clearly in my brain. I just want there to be a world of equity and inclusion and accessibility for everyone. And yeah, I just wish people could help us all create an inclusive space. Everyone is treated equally.
And in a similar vein, maybe a stepping stone to that, as somebody that is often in my academics talking about social justice and using a lot of terminology that I'm still, having just started my minor last year, becoming more accustomed to myself. But speaking to family members and friends that are outside of that arena, sometimes it can be difficult to bridge the gap between what I'm learning and what I hope they take away from a conversation. It can be brushed off a little bit. So if anything, I would hope that people would at least be a little more, not critical necessarily, necessarily, but walk away with a different framework in their minds that they can kind of build new information onto, almost provide them with cognitive scaffolding so that they have this very basic framework that they can think about these topics in a new way, be made aware that these exist and that there are people that are, many people, more than they probably think, that are being impacted by the topics that we're discussing, and that they can, with that awareness, start to learn more and pick up on things in a new way.
I agree with everything that Katie said, and I think another major thought that I have while doing this show and working with my collective is that it's really important for people just to start with having an awareness of these topics as something that's really real for a lot of people, and there are major barriers to accessibility for so many people in a lot of ways, and before you can help make changes and help make the world more accessible, you need to be aware and just acknowledge that these are real experiences for people. And then through that awareness, you can help be a part of the change for the better.
For me, it's more of being a person with a disability, just because it's different in the sense that people may think that they get offended because of the terminology they use, which in my case, I don't get offended that easily. But I could see why people might feel a little bit uncomfortable, you know. So there is a little bit discomfort, but I think if you're comfortable with yourself, then all things start to play in. I think it gave me more confidence in myself. I was more open, whereas before I probably wasn't. So I was still trying to figure out who I was or what a disability really is out there, because, you know, I was just concentrating with school, that I didn't never really focus outside what it's going to be like as a person with a disability. So doing a radio or stories, it has taught me a little bit to be comfortable with who I am. Not that I wasn't, but there's more people out there. And it's good that for me, I'm meeting different people who have a disability so we can connect.
This radio documentary was written and produced by DP Leal, Dama Korek, and Estefania Solis for CITR 101.9 FM. This documentary was made possible through the support of CITR Radio. Madeline Taylor, CITR's spoken word coordinator. Voice recording audio engineering was made possible by Alex Conavis, and all the people that were interviewed for this documentary, including Katie Tissington-Turner, Molly McAllister, DP Leal, Janet Meek, Derek Moore, and Michael Kingsmill.
We just played Velvet Dinosaurs and their latest hit, Eating the Plate. Now, let's go to the phones and hear what you have to say. Go ahead, caller, you're on the line.
Master Dirty Red Scum! Tail in the teeth, red hats!
Really?
Kill!
That's really
kill! Bad. Kill! Filthy bastard tummies! I hate them, I hate them!
Okay, well, You know, maybe you should relax a little bit. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Yeah. The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival returns to Calgary from June 20th to 24th, 2018. Discover over 250 bands, comedy acts, film, and art in more than 35 venues across the city. This year's festival features guest curator Deerhoof, innovative indie rock act Dirty Projectors, electronic innovators Mount Kimby, versatile folk pop duo Way Oak, futuristic hip-hop titans Shabazz Palaces, outsider pop auteur John Mouse, and many more yet to be announced. Visit sledisland.com for details, travel deals, and to get your festival pass.
CITR and Mint Records have released their biannual collab, Pop Alliance Volume 5. This glamorous record features staple Vancouver artists, Devours, Swim Team, Lord Fuckerman, Chris Horrific, and so many more. Get your copy for only $15 on iTunes or at the Mint Records store now.
You know what's better than reading a great magazine? Reading a great magazine that also helps you fight poverty. Megaphone Magazine is sold by homeless and low-income vendors on the streets of Vancouver and Victoria. Vendors buy magazines for 75 cents and sell them for $2. It's flexible, low-barrier work for people who may not have access to traditional jobs. Download the Megaphone app to find vendors and buy the magazine, even when you don't have change.
One of Victoria's best up-and-coming bands, Fortune Killers, is on tour with their debut album, Temper Temper. Fortune Killers with Vancouver alt-rockers High Love play Guilt & Co. Tuesday, June 12th.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Mm-hmm.